From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Lyosha Gorshkov knows what it's like to be gay in Russia.
I had to leave because otherwise I will be beaten up and killed because I already had before some issues with physical abuse and violence.
He fled Russia in 2015 when he was 29 years old.
I packed my suitcase and left country for the United States.
But even he was shocked when he heard reports of police in the Russian Republic of Chechnya rounding up gay men and torturing them.
The head of Chechnya opened up some sort of concentration camps where they do a lot of weird stuff, like beating them by electroshock, trying to actually rape them, trying to beat them up until they fainted.
The independent newspaper Novaya Gazeta broke the story a few weeks ago. It reported that Chechen police have detained and tortured more than 100 gay men and that three people have been killed. We spoke to Svetlana Zaharova of the LGBT network in St. Petersburg, who confirms what the paper found.
We were reported about like hundreds of people detained and tortured. And in the end of March, we created a hotline, especially for people in Chechnya who are afraid for their life. And by now, already 60 people contacted us, and all these people are telling horrible stories.
Svetlana says Chechnya is an ultra-traditional society with strong Islamic values.
Russia itself is a very homophobic place, but Chechnya is probably, for LGBT person, is the worst place to live because it's absolutely impossible not only to be LGBT activists, but it's impossible to be a publicly open gay there.
She says, in Chechnya, having a gay relative is seen as a stain on the entire family or clan.
There is such thing as honor killing in Chechnya, and it means that family members are considered to kill homosexual person because this person put too much shame on the whole family. But now it's like a campaign against homosexual people there.
Local authorities say the whole story is made up and claim homosexuals don't even exist in the region. Svetlana's group is helping people flee Chechnya and Russia, which is dangerous work.
So basically, we organize the evacuation process. We evacuate people from Chechnya, first of all, from the region. And then we provide accommodation, medical support, of course, psychological support, because people are scared to death. And we also try to organize evacuation outside of Russia.
But she won't tell us exactly how they do it.
We keep this information the top secret for security reasons because the evacuation process is still going. And we don't want to put at additional risk those people who are still in Chechnya and who want to get out of there.
That's where Lyosha can help. He works with a group called Rusa LGBT in New York City. They help people who have fled Russia and neighboring countries, including some people from Chechnya.
It seems like life for the LGBT community in Russia is tough, but in Chechnya, it's brutal.
It's brutal. You're right. When I got to know some people from there, they told me stories you could not believe because, yes, you experienced violence and government watching you, but what is happening in Chechnya with gay people who are so afraid to hang out, they're so afraid, they don't use any internet because it could be checked by the government. They are invisible totally.
Before he fled Russia, Lyosha was working as a university professor and he was openly gay. He says everything changed when Vladimir Putin pushed through a repressive anti-gay propaganda law in 2014.
All of a sudden, a government body like secret police will turn to us and try to threat us, try to, you know, suppress our activities. And when I got those problems at my university and some articles came out blaming myself and my colleagues for spreading sodomy and propaganda of pedophilia, I understood that it was the critical point and I had to leave.
Lyosha thinks that Putin's campaign against the LGBT community also led to the attacks on gay men in Chechnya.
I believe so. Absolutely. It's number one reason, because otherwise, without a green light from the federal government, they never will do it. They never will do it without any fear to be punished, to be persecuted. It's literally the impact and the cause.
We first reported last fall on how dangerous it is to be gay in Russia with Coda Story, a new media venture that does in-depth crisis reporting. We're going to revisit those stories today, starting with reporter Amy McKinnon, who takes us to St. Petersburg.
My tickets were booked, and I was packing my bag when I received a message from a friend in St. Petersburg. A journalist, Dmitry Silikin, had been murdered. Russia can be a dangerous place for journalists. Over the years, dozens have been killed for getting on the wrong side of corrupt politicians and gang bosses. But this explanation just didn't fit for Dmitry. He was an arts reporter. He reviewed the city's ballet and opera. But Dmitry's friends and local media believe that Dmitry was killed because he was gay. When I arrive in St. Petersburg, I seek out Dmitry's friends and colleagues to find out more about what happened. Tatiana Moskvina was best friends with Dmitry since college. And when I meet her at her home, she is visibly still in shock.
When I try and imagine that our neat, intelligent Dmitry was killed with a knife in the tidy apartment where I have been, he cleaned it twice a week. Everything had its place, books, CDs. A vase of flowers was carefully placed on the windowsill. I cannot imagine that apartment covered in blood.
Police believe Dmitry met his killer on an online dating site and invited the man to his apartment. Homophobic vigilantes have been known to prowl these sites, luring gay men and women out on dates, only to humiliate, attack, or even kill them. When the police found Dmitry, he was lying in a pool of blood with multiple stab wounds. His killer had taken his cell phone, his laptop, and house keys, leaving him trapped to bleed to death in his own home. By the time I meet Tatiana, the police have arrested a 21-year-old student, Sergei Kosyarov, on suspicion of murder. Local media reported that during police questioning, he said that his life was, quote, a crusade against certain social groups, and that he'd asked to be referred to as the cleaner. Kosyarov's lawyer has dismissed these statements as total nonsense, but Tatiana believes the police have got their guy. The case is closed, she tells me with a heavy sigh.
Imagine all his life Dmitry wrote about art and culture, and he ended up in the crime pages.
I go to the offices of St. Petersburg Delavoy, where Dmitry worked for years. It's the city's leading business newspaper, and it's well known for its independent stance. When I meet with Dmitry's editor, another Dmitry, Dmitry Grozny, he blames politicians and state-owned media for stirring up this hatred.
In Russia now, there is such a concentrated amount of hatred. At any given time, you can just turn on the TV and watch the news. It's Orwellian, the five-minute hate, where they tell people to hate their neighbors, and unfortunately, it's directed towards gay people.
I head to St. Isaac Square, a busy plaza in the center of the city. It is emblematic of St. Petersburg's imperial style and is dominated by the Marinsky Palace, built by Tsar Nicholas as a gift to his daughter. It's now home to the St. Petersburg City Legislature. I'm here to meet a member of the Assembly, Vitaly Milonov. In 2012, he became the face of homophobia here when he masterminded the city's infamous gay propaganda law. The law is so vaguely worded and bizarre that it can be difficult to explain. It's based on the assumption that LGBT people propagandize to children by supposedly spreading their ideas to them. So the law prohibits any public portrayals of LGBT issues in a positive or even neutral way. So that means no articles in magazines, no gay characters on TV, no support for LGBT kids in school, nothing. The St. Petersburg law paved the way for a nationwide ban 1 year later. Milonov is also the guy who said that gay athletes could be arrested at the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. He's a busy man, but he readily agrees to meet me in his office. While I wait, I chat with some of his staff members, two giggly interns and his assistant, Ilya. I ask them what they think of their boss's sponsorship of the gay propaganda law.
Like the spring's first day, like the sunshine, homophobia is a beautiful. That's a rainbow.
Just in case you didn't catch that, Ilya is comparing homophobia to spring's first day. He says it is a beautiful thing, like a rainbow. I get the signal that Milonov is ready and I'm shown to his office. Now, before I continue, I just want to give a quick heads up. Milonov is known for making controversial statements, so I'm expecting to hear some of the slurs and hate speech that he is infamous for. He shifts uncomfortably in his chair and scarcely makes eye contact during our interview.
Why did you feel that it was necessary to introduce such a bill?
We have to face moral dangers, moral factors of present world, like homosexual propaganda, which is disgusting, immoral, disease of a modern anti-Christian society.
Milonov is a devoutly religious man. The walls of his room are lined with religious icons and a black flag which reads, Orthodoxy or Death, hangs behind his desk. There is no nationwide monitoring of hate crimes committed against LGBT people in Russia. Local and international rights groups piece together what they can, and both have reported a sharp increase in homophobic and transphobic violence since the gay propaganda law was passed. Human Rights Watch blames this violence on the anti-gay rhetoric coming from politicians and state media. I ask Milonov what he makes of this.
Human Rights Watch is a cheap piece of I'm sorry for my French. And we have no serious figures of persecution of violence against homosexuals. There is quite a big number of criminal cases that are connected with the homosexuals because many homosexuals, at the same time, they love little kids.
Do you have any evidence of that?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Where?
It's just a statistics.
This anti-gay myth is standard rhetoric, not just in Russia, but anywhere that people are attacking the LGBT community. And in St. Petersburg, these kind of statements have inspired violence against LGBT people, the kind of violence that police believe led to the murder of Dmitry Silikin, which I ask about next.
Well, if I could give you a very recent example here in St. Petersburg, I'm sure you heard about the murder of the journalist Dmitry Silikin, who was stabbed in his apartment, and it's believed that this was motivated by the fact that he was gay. And the young man who killed him...
I know this case.
And local media have reported that he was an admirer of yours.
This guy, what happened with him? This old faggot got acquainted via the internet with the young guy, and he invited him to his house, either to rape him. At least the main reason for this invitation was sexual harassment.
But that's not what the police believe at all. They think that the suspected murderer set up the date with Dmitry with the intention to kill him. My interview with Milonov goes on for a while, and he continues to spout the hate-filled propaganda that has turned this cultured city into the epicenter of the anti-gay movement in Russia. The next day, I managed to set up an interview with one of the city's most infamous anti-gay vigilantes, Timur Bulatov. Like Dmitry's suspected killer, he also calls himself the cleaner. Bulatov has not been known to be violent, but he does seek to destroy the livelihoods of LGBT people by combing through the social media accounts of St. Petersburg teachers, singling out the ones he suspects of being gay and reporting them to their schools. We agree to meet at his office in the district council building, but as I'm in the taxi on my way there, he messages me with a different meeting point. This last-minute switch makes me nervous. We meet at his rented office, a cramped and claustrophobic room. The rest of the building seems to be empty. As I walk in, I notice a camera set up on a tripod so that he can film whatever happens next. Bulatov's assistant, a tall man in a roll-neck sweatshirt, sits in the corner of the room and fixes a silent stare on us. The feeling that maybe I've been set up doesn't seem so paranoid anymore, given how many journalists have been attacked for their reporting here in Russia. I ask Bulatov to introduce himself, and he jumps straight to the point.
We fight for the unifying moral issues of traditional family values, for faith, for the fatherland, for the fight for statehood.
Bulatov is deeply proud of his work and boasts about how many teachers he claims to have gotten fired.
At first it was like 29, but now it's more like 50. Some left with a scandal, went through the courts. The more prudent perverts, who understand their perversion, chose to quit themselves.
It's not actually illegal in Russia to be a teacher if you're gay. But if a teacher is publicly outed, the stigma is so strong that they won't last long in their position. Bulatov speaks with such a single-minded hatred of LGBT people that at one point he actually breaks out into a sweat. When I ask what he thinks of the attacks on LGBT people in the city, he says he doesn't condone violence against homosexuals, but he certainly doesn't condemn it either.
Well, society reacts the way it reacts. Why are we always talking about gay people as victims? Why are we not talking about the actions of these homosexuals, these lesbians and faggots? What they do to provoke a reaction?
Halfway through the interview, I notice a handgun sitting on the table next to him. I'm too afraid to ask what it's for. By the time I leave, I am so on edge that I head straight to a dive bar across the street and settle my nerves with a shot of vodka. I'm glad the interview is over, but it's not long before I bump into Bulatov again. So I'm here in St. Petersburg on the 15th of April. It's actually the Day of Silence. It's an international day used by LGBT activists in many countries as kind of day of remembrance for people who've been killed or harassed or bullied for being gay. Local activists have organised a meeting here in the centre of St. Petersburg in front of the train station. Now, events like this are quite often broken up by skinheads or by the police, so I'm interested to see how this is going to go. There's already a very heavy police presence. I can see a truck of the OMON, which is Russian Special Forces, sitting out front. Timur Bulatov, who we met yesterday, has shown up to disrupt the event. He's got a broom with a toy rat hanging off it. The toy rat is holding rainbow flags. And he's walking around telling people watching that these are perverts. So there's a group of 24 or so young activists. I watch them put duct tape over their mouths. It's a symbolic gesture of silence. And they walk down the city's main street, Nevsky Prospekt. Along the way, I get chatting to Mark, an activist for a local LGBT group called Coming Out. Mark's job today is to document any acts of hate speech or homophobic violence at the demonstration. As a transgender person himself, Mark is at an even greater risk of being harassed or attacked on the street. He tells me that at today's protest, someone has already verbally attacked one of their activists.
Who was it? Who tried to attack him?
Just some guy. He was very young. He was speaking just some government propaganda, like, we are Orthodox country, we have traditions, you have no place here.
Does it frighten you?
No. Not now. I was very frightened before. But then my friend committed a suicide because of homophobia. Then I understood that silence will not help anyone and I must speak for myself and for those who cannot speak themselves.
Just moments after we speak, the police show up with a loudspeaker telling everyone that the protest is illegal. In Russia, to hold any kind of protest or demonstration which involves more than just one person, you have to go to the city to get a special permit. Out of nowhere, the police just rush at the protesters and line them up against the wall. Some of them stand with their mouths still taped up in silence, but others try and reason with the police. And then seemingly at random, seven of the activists are just picked out of the lineup and taken away to police vans parked around the corner. The next day, I head down to one of the city's small LGBT community centres. It's in the heart of the city, but tucked away in a basement unmarked. You'd never guess it was here. I'm greeted by a veteran of the city's LGBT activism movement, Alexei. He is asked that we don't use his last name out of fear that he could be targeted. It's a humble space, three rooms and hardly any furniture. But despite their tiny budget, they've done what they can to make it cosy. A number of young activists from the centre were arrested at yesterday's demonstration. They were charged $200 each for participating in an unsanctioned protest. That's a small fortune in a country where the national minimum wage is just $109 per month. They've gathered here tonight to discuss what happened yesterday. They ask for privacy, so I step into the next room to have a chat with Alexei.
It's very important to us to protect the right to be who we are, yeah? As for me, I have got so much support. I'm ready to help to the people around in return.
It's been a long week in St. Petersburg, and I am exhausted by all the hatred that I have seen. But when I ask Alexei if he has hope for the future, he says he does.
Hope? I do. I do.
Despite everything that's going on, he speaks with such determination, such optimism, that his voice begins to crack.
We are at risk, but my optimism helps me to believe that everything will be good, sooner or later. Not now, not in a year, not in 3 years, but in 20 years, everything will be fine. I'm sure.
That report was from Amy McKinnon of Coda Story. Since the story first aired, Sergei Kozarev pled guilty to murdering journalist Dmitry Telikin. The murder investigation concluded that the killing wasn't a hate crime, just the result of a quarrel. And remember Vitaly Milanov? He was the controversial local politician that Amy spoke with. Well, he's gone on to become a member of the Russian National Parliament. In the past couple months, he's made headlines for anti-Semitism, wanting to investigate the Freemasons, and suggesting the new Power Rangers movie be banned. The crackdown on the gay community in St. Petersburg became a blueprint for Vladimir Putin's national policy, a policy that's finding support from religious activists in our own backyard. That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.